Does the U.S. believe it has a special relationship with God? Does it have a divinely inspired mission to promote liberty? These are the kinds of questions Madeleine Albright addresses in her new book, The Mighty and the Almighty, Reflections on America, God, and World Affairs. Albright was the first woman to be Secretary of State. She served under President Clinton after first serving as his U.N. ambassador. Her memoir, Madam Secretary, was a bestseller. Why did you want to write a book about religion and politics?
Well, because I wanted to really look forward in terms of what the issues were for foreign policy. I wanted to look forward and look at the major forces that were at work as we go into the 21st century. And I have to tell you, I used to say this, and now that I can't believe I actually said it because it was so presumptuous. And that was that it wasn't that I was just the first female Secretary of State, but I was the last Secretary of State of the 20th century and the first of the 21st. And I think we saw the 21st century in a more hopeful way, I have to say, that, you know, we all made a little bit of fun of President Clinton, who used to say that he was building a bridge into the next century. And we were looking at how to revise a lot of our institutions and how to look at what the challenges of the 21st century were, all of which were basically transnational issues to do with the environment and health and drugs and nuclear proliferation. And all of a sudden, I think that a lot was turned upside down with 9/11 and questions of, were we dealing with a religion out of the 7th century, and what was happening in terms of our interpretation of our relationship with God, and going back to issues that had been troubling for a long time and didn't seem like 21st century issues. And I wanted to explore how, in fact, the 21st century was evolving and what we could do to get back to the hopeful aspect of it.
You write in your book that you can't remember any leading American diplomat speaking in depth about the role of religion in shaping the world. What were you taught when you were coming up through the ranks about the role of religion in diplomacy?
Well, I think I'm pretty standard for my generation, and also somebody who spent a lot of time reading Dean Acheson and George Kennan and Hans Morgenthau, who have a very, what is known as a realistic, realpolitik view of foreign policy, which is that life is complicated enough, the conflicts are very difficult, so the last thing you want to do is inject God and religion into it. It only complicates things. And so mostly when we ran into issues, people would say, you know, we don't need to bring God and religion into it. And I really came to realize, as I was Secretary of State, that actually one had to bring God and religion into it, not because I'm a theologian or because I've turned into a religious mystic, but because there really are some tools that allow us to help solve some of the problems.
Like what? What are you thinking of?
Well, I think that as one looks at the three monotheistic religions, you see that there are many elements in common. There is clearly an understanding of the importance of love and charity and respect for the individual, and a variety of ways that things are framed in the same way, that if religious leaders talk to each other, they are able to find the common threads. And what we have seen to a great extent is that religion over the centuries has been a very divisive aspect. And I'm, I hope not in vain, thinking about the way that religion and religious leaders can actually help to break down what some of the problems are, and through using religion can bring people together.
But as a former Secretary of State and UN ambassador, you've been in a lot of situations where you've seen religion as the divisive factor as opposed to the kind of healing, ethical, moral factor.
I have. And but you know what is interesting? And for instance, I have been asked whether there were times we should have thought about this in more detail. And actually, I would just, if I can take a minute, talk about our experience at Camp David in the summer of 2000. President Clinton, who is a religious man but has not made religion a policy, he and I have talked about this, and he said he read the Bible and he read the Torah and was looking for ways that there might be elements that would be helpful. And we even, as we were dealing with the issue of Jerusalem, came up, and the issue was sovereignty, we came up with the idea that perhaps we could talk about the holy places as being under divine sovereignty. And so we were looking at ways that religion could help. But I think the place where we made a mistake was in the following way. A lot of people think we went to Camp David because President Clinton wanted a legacy. That's not why we were there. It was because Prime Minister Ehud Barak felt that the last months of President Clinton's presidency could be useful for exploring some bold ideas that he had. And Chairman Arafat did not want to come. And I actually had to persuade him to come. I don't think he actually was capable in the end of making a very difficult decision of seeing himself as a president rather than as a freedom fighter. But we thought that he could make the decisions about the dispositions of the holy places in Jerusalem. And the truth is that that was not his sole responsibility. We should have considered much more what the other Muslim leaders thought and how they could support him. But because Prime Minister Barak had wanted to keep a lot of the discussions close to his vest and had not really given us a lot of bottom lines, we were not able to mobilize some of the other leaders to help in supporting Arafat in what was arguably a very difficult decision. So it's pieces like that of trying to bring in religion and understanding what the issues are in a very difficult problem. It's not the solution to everything, but I do think that if our diplomats were better trained in religion, they would understand better some of the implications of issues that are beyond, that are not cultural, but are religious.
When you found out that you were Jewish, did that have any impact on your diplomatic work and how you worked with countries that were primarily countries of one religion, whether that was, you know, Christian or Muslim or Jewish?
Well, the short answer is no. I have a very complicated religious background. I kid a little bit about the fact that I was raised a Catholic, married an Episcopalian, found out I was Jewish, which is why I think I'm capable of having written this book. But it is a complicated background. I grew up with certain moral standards and beliefs, and I am also very much a child of World War II. And while I certainly knew about the Holocaust, I didn't know that it applied to me personally. And I had certain beliefs about how one dealt with various issues. I don't think it affected me. I had there were lots of people, actually, before I became Secretary of State who said that a woman of whatever religion could not deal with Arab countries particularly. And I actually found I had no problems. I went to many Arab countries. I, of course, did arrive in a very large plane that said United States of America. But when they dealt with me, they knew, or when they wanted to deal with the United States, they had to deal with me. And I sometimes say I actually had more problems with the men in our own government who had seen me kind of rise through the ranks and wondered how I'd gotten to be Secretary of State. So I did not have those kinds of problems. I had always had very strong beliefs about the importance of the American relationship with Israel. So from my own perspective, I did not have any change of heart having found out about an addition to my already very rich heritage.
My guest is Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State and former U.N. Ambassador. Her new book is called The Mighty and the Almighty, Reflections on America, God, and World Affairs. You write in your book that the invasion of Iraq may eventually rank among the worst foreign policy disasters in U.S. history. What do you think the long-term repercussions might be?
Well, I think they are very, very significant. First of all, I, from the very beginning, said that this was a war of choice, not of necessity. I totally agreed with what President Bush said about Saddam Hussein, and I said the same things, and I actually said them longer for 8 years. But I didn't understand why the war had to happen when it did. We had not finished the job in Afghanistan, and that's, after all, where the terrorists came from. And we certainly did not have an adequate plan for the post-invasion aspect of this. The repercussions are many. One is, obviously, that Iraq is a mess. That's a diplomatic term of art. And we don't know what is going to happen to it. There have been suggestions about a more federally formed Iraq and with a weaker central government, but an existing one. But what I'm concerned about is actually the breakup of Iraq, which, in fact, would be totally destabilizing with the Kurds linking up with other Kurds and Shias with Iran and Sunnis under the influence of Saudi Arabia. It's a very complex story, but certainly the breakup of Iraq is one issue. The second is, I think, one of the biggest unintended consequences, and that is the rise of Iran as a regional power, and certainly one where we're unclear about their nuclear ambitions. The third is that the message out of Iraq is wrong. The president talked about the axis of evil, and that was Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. If I were either Kim Jong-il or President Ahmadinejad, I would read that to say, if you don't have nuclear weapons, you get invaded, and if you do have nuclear weapons, you don't get invaded. We didn't invade the Soviet Union, Russia, or China. And we did invade Iraq. And then finally, I think in many ways it puts some question as to what American power is all about and our reputation. I loved, and I underline that, representing the United States. I knew that we were not perfect, but I did see us as an exceptional nation. And what we're now asking is that exceptions be made for us, and our moral authority has been seriously damaged. And that's why I say that this could turn out to be one of the greatest disasters. I hope it isn't. There isn't anybody I know that wants us to fail. I hope it isn't. But it is, you know, there are not a lot of people that look at Iraq now and say, I'd like my country to look just like this.
Madeleine Albright, you were the first female Secretary of State. Condoleezza Rice is the second. You disagree with Condoleezza Rice on a lot of political matters, but you have something very much in common, which is that you were the first and second secretaries of states who were women. Do you ever commiserate about that with her?
Well, we do, but do you know we have something else in common, which is that my father was her professor and actually persuaded her to go into international relations. So it is one of the really interesting coincidences, and she and I've talked about that. She says that my father was the major influence on her in her life. When I worked for a lot of Democratic presidential candidates, and one of them I called her up, and she said, Madeleine, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm a Republican. And I said, Condi, how could you be when we had the same father? So she and I have talked about that. I don't think we don't commiserate, because I think I certainly loved being Secretary of State, and there's every indication that she does. And she's very busy and she's traveling, so we haven't spent a great deal of time on personal issues. But when she first became National Security Advisor and I was still Secretary, we had some conversations about how to operate within the U.S. government.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you so much for your really incredibly important and difficult questions, Terry.
Madeleine Albright's new book is called The Mighty and the Almighty.